Assalamu alaikum and peace. Welcome to this episode of Misconceptions. I'm your host, Muhammad Hashim, and alhamdulillah, today we have in our studios Sheikh Yusuf Estes. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We also have in our studios today our studio audience. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Today, inshallah, we are talking about the many misconceptions about marriage, before marriage, and I guess what happens after marriage. So, Sheikh, marriage and all the different questions and misconceptions about marriages, where can we begin with?
I think the first thing to do is talk about the Arabic word. This is one of my favorite things to do, is talk about words, etymology of words, and how we understand them. In English, marriage means a union or coming together of things. There can be a marriage even in the metal industry when you marry together two types of metal. There's a marriage in the agricultural industry when you put two plants, pieces of plants together, you marry them together. This is a union of forming something that is a bond, and it's understood in the context of religion and society, as far as people are concerned, to be a bond that is supposedly never broken. I mean, this is to go on and on and on, and they're married together and they don't separate. This is the implication behind that word marriage in English. Mm-hmm. In Arabic, the word is zawaj, and zawjdi would be like my wife, the possessive form of it. So this is to get the words out of the way. Now, as far as misunderstandings go, I think one of the things that we begin with is, from the word itself, that if you think of something as being locked together and you can't get out of it, there you are, you're stuck. All right. On the other hand, in English compared to Arabic, it's not exactly the same thing, because we're not insisting that that's unbreakable, has to be forever. Be nice if it works out, but if it doesn't, there are some reliefs offered there. If there's a problem, there's some relief. If it's irreconcilable, there's relief for that, all within Islam itself, not having to go to a secular side.
Yeah. Maybe we should take some of the questions from the studio audience. Maybe they've got a couple.
Yeah, that's a very
questions.
Good idea.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay. Now, what's your question?
Why no dating in Islam?
Why no dating? Yeah. You're going to start right with that one now. Yeah. Because we're talking about marriage and he's talking about dating.
Dating.
Well, this is a question we get a lot, isn't it? People ask that, how come you guys don't date? And that's a question we get. So
it's a common question, isn't it? Why can't we date before marriage?
Yes, and this is about one of the most basic principles in Islam itself, which is dealing with rights and limits. Always we come back to this, rights and limits. There's a balance here. Now, if I want to go out and look for a wife, according to the secular way, it's just go out and hang out in a bar or wherever. It doesn't have to be, but you know. And you meet somebody and you like them. They seem pretty nice. Maybe you meet, take them again to another place, and this place, that place. Finally you go, oh, this seems okay, but I'm not ready for a commitment. Let's just live together for a while. And then it starts progressing into what they call a relationship, that they may even live together for 4 or 5 years. Some movie stars have lived together so long, people thought they were married,
yeah,
and they weren't. And then they have a child, and then they have another child, and then all of a sudden, they want to go their separate ways, as they say. And this can really destroy a family. It can destroy the children. We find that the result from this kind of behavior is not very positive for the society itself, and certainly not comforting and secure for the individuals in the family. If you don't have a commitment, if there's nothing as a commitment there, then it's not fair to either side. Because this is something that affects not only the individual, but it affects the immediate family, the outer family, the neighborhood, the society, and ultimately the whole planet.
Mm.
Now, to some degree, because suppose the boy is very attracted to a girl. She's not that attracted to him, but he's spending a lot of money on her, and then she starts feeling guilty. You know, I guess, you know, what can I say? Then maybe his parents are involved. Yeah, come on, marry my son. Well, I don't know. And then her parents start pressuring her. Yeah, why don't you marry this other boy? He's got more potential. Maybe he's going to be a doctor. And so now you get these families start competing with each other over these issues. It can really be bad. But there is something in Islam that Islam does permit very much. A man and a wife can get married. That's a contractual agreement, written out, spelled out. They get married. Now, if they don't like each other, after a few days, they can just separate and there's no problem. There's no problem. And it's not considered a marriage. You know how?
No, I'm not sure. I was going to ask you what they did before
what
marriage.
What the heck am I talking about?
Yeah.
Because he's saying that's not possible. Actually, as long as there's no intercourse, as long as they don't, we call it consummate the marriage.
Yeah.
If they say, okay, this is really not working out. I don't want to be married to her. She don't want to be married to me. Bye. Then whatever gifts he's given her
are returned. Okay.
Simple as that.
What's that called?
It's called no fault. Okay. No problem.
No problem at all.
Yeah. It very seldom happens, but it could happen that the boy finds that he's really not attracted to her. And he feels it right away. Or the girl's really not attracted to him. And just says, look, you know, this really isn't working out for me. And they can also be married and not live together in the beginning. For instance, they said, well, we want to get married so we can simulate what you guys call dating. All right?
Yeah.
They can still go out together. They're married, so it's illegal in Islam.
But
as long as they don't consummate. If they consummate, they're married. That's the deal clincher. So another point about this is over wealth. Suppose a girl marries a guy. They get married in Western civilization. And then she says, I want a divorce. Even if they didn't consummate, for instance. You know, maybe he's like really old or there's some problem. He doesn't consummate with her. She can still sue for divorce and clean this guy out.
Yeah,
unless they have what they call prenuptial agreement. Well, in Islam, prenuptial agreements are already there. Because it's clear from the beginning that it's not about wealth. In fact, if she's very wealthy and she marries a man and they divorce, her wealth doesn't go to him.
Okay.
Does it? No.
No.
And also his wealth doesn't go to her either. What's provided for is very clear in the contract when they begin. According to Islam, the man must provide the financial stability, the house, the clothing, the food, the medical, everything that she needs, he provides. She never provides for him. That is the rule. That's from the Quran itself. So, basically, it works out nice for the lady. It's called, I got what I have, and I get some of what you have too. But I don't get everything. And if there's a divorce, it's not set up so that somebody gets to clean somebody else out.
Okay, Sheikh, you're talking about the Western civilization, how they get to know each other through dating and, you know, nothing very concrete, nothing very responsible. How do we get to know each other before marriage? Do we get engaged? Or
one of the things that we do is, of course, have our parents meet with other parents and begin to explore from early on when we're very young.
Okay.
To start thinking, what about this boy for our daughter? And what about that girl for our son? And we go through some process and we're thinking ahead. Because your parents care about you more than anybody else. And they know you better than anybody else. So early on, they're exploring possibilities. And then, if it doesn't work out, there are others that come along the way. And they say, wait, this new girl moved into the neighborhood. Maybe she's more fitting. So the parents, again, will go and meet the other parents.
Yeah.
And be sure, because one of the key things a lot of people don't observe, how a person treats their parents, very likely that relationship will pass across between man and wife.
Is that called an arranged marriage if that happens? Is that an arranged marriage?
This is another subject, which I think we'll come to in a minute. But what I want to talk about on here just is about the dating subject.
Okay.
The dating side of it is that in Islam, there's no dating like we know in the West, but very clearly there's the opportunity to meet ahead of time.
Conditioned, under conditions.
In controlled environment.
Environment.
Chaperones. Yeah. As long as the chaperones are there, they can do what they'd like to. Maybe they'd like to go to the beach. They can go to the beach, but the boy would stay with his family. The girl stays with her family. They go to the beach and, you know, sit out and enjoy some things, talk back and forth. But as far as being able to see the girl without all the covering on, that doesn't come until they're very close to the marriage part of it. And this, again, is a protection for her and for him.
Okay. Well, we haven't got much time left before the break, but we can get one more question, and inshallah answer
yes,
it before
ahead,
the break.
My question is, what about dowry?
Dowry.
Oh, okay.
Mahar?
Mahar
yes.
And dowry.
You're talking about the mahar, the dowry. Okay. In Islam, this is a very big subject, but to touch on it, it is something of a gift given to the girl by the boy. He must provide something for her, and this is the deal clincher from his side. The deal clincher, as we already discovered from the other side, is if the girl gives herself physically to the boy, then that completes the marriage. That's why we said if it doesn't happen, she has to give back the gift, the dowry. Okay. Now, this is the opposite, by the way, of the Christian tradition where the girl has to give the dowry to the boy. In Islam, the boy
Christian
has...
tradition...
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the idea of Santa Claus came from this.
Oh.
At the time of the Nicaea Council, the bishop, St. Nicholas, actually had a bag of silver, and he threw it through the window of a man's house who had two daughters and he couldn't get them married, so that the man could use that silver to give to get his daughters married. And that was the tradition of Santa Claus having the bag, and the whole thing started with that. And that's a true story.
Can I hold you on that thought there, Sheikh? We have to go to a quick break. Inshallah, when we return, we can continue our misconceptions about marriages and then continue talking about the dowry, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to Misconceptions. I'm your host, Muhammad Hashim. Just before the break, we were talking with Sheikh Yusuf Estes about the dowry, and you were mentioning something about Santa Claus in the Christian faith. Can you go on about it? Very interesting. I've never heard of all this before.
Yeah, well, I got this actually from some information from the Catholics on the subject that the idea was, at that time, it was very prevalent, the concept that women really were such of a low status, people didn't really want them. And if you wanted to get your daughter married, you basically had to come up with some gifts or money or wealth.
For the man.
For the man. Otherwise, the tribal customs, you see, were not limited only to Arabia. This was prevalent throughout the world. As a matter of fact, at the time of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, the women were treated so horrible in the Arabian Peninsula that it was actually such a disgrace to have a daughter. They used to take their daughters to the desert and bury them alive. A little baby girl, they would bury them alive.
Oh,
now, this infanticide was something unbelievable, and yet this was their custom. But this was not exclusive only to that part of the world. We also find that at the same time, the Catholic Church convened a council to decide whether or not a woman even had a soul.
A soul?
Yes, because they felt that Eve is the one who caused all the problems.
Okay.
So maybe she was, you know, not even having a ruh or soul. At the time of the Nicaea Council, that was at the time when Catholic Church actually came away from paganism and took over one of the sects of Christianity. And that's when the bishop, Nicholas, who they later made a saint, was concerned about a family who couldn't get their daughters married because they didn't have wealth. And that's when he took this bag of silver and threw it through the window.
Okay.
And so when they found it, they were all happy, and they took this. By the way, you know, people don't like to accept charity, so that's why he threw it through the window like that.
Okay. But in Islam, it's very different, isn't it? Dowry is...
It's the opposite.
It's complete opposite.
It's the opposite. We're showing respect to the women, and what an honor it is to have you join our family. We very much would like to encourage your family to accept our family. Let us come together and let us offer gifts.
Okay.
Okay.
Are the gifts for like security, just in case something happens, if the marriage doesn't continue, or is it for
no
better life?
No, it's for the girl, because
just
she's
girl.
Giving herself to the man.
Okay.
Now, his side of the deal is he gives this as an offer. Then there's a piece of paper that spells it all out, and she signs it. Then she gives it back. 99.99% of the marriage is done at that point. The only thing left now is for them to be together intimately,
okay,
to conceive the marriage. At that time, when she accepts him inside of her, then they're married, and that's it.
That's it.
She's
married.
A married lady.
Okay.
Now, in the case, of course, of virgins, she's no longer a virgin, he's no longer a virgin. If, though, they decide before intimacy to break it off and say, no, this is not going to work. They're both still virgins or whatever, and now they return back to that state. This is not considered a marriage.
Okay. Does that happen? Is that common?
Oh, okay, it happens. Not very often, because two young people together like that, well, you
That's
know.
It.
But it could happen, and it has. And then at that stage, because it says it in the Quran, it's clear that he gives back to her whatever she has. She gives back to him whatever's his.
Okay.
And that's the way it should be. But it keeps insisting again and again to be fair, to be fair with each other. Don't hate each other. Don't put each other down. Whatever you do, don't talk about each other
mm-hmm.
to other people. Let it go. Whatever you know about the other person, intimate, leave it alone. Just let it go.
JazakAllah khairan, Sheikh. There's so much to talk about, isn't there, when it comes to marriages? I'm sure the eager audience have a couple more questions they would like to ask.
Yeah, let's take another question.
Yeah.
Sheikh,
yes.
I would like to ask, men can have many wives. Why can't women have many husbands?
That's a very, very good question. But
you know, usually people will just say, how come you can have more than one wife? Or they'll say, why four? Why that number?
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had more than four at a time. And what about that? These are the questions. But this question is a little different twist on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for us to take it. What happened one time, I was giving a lecture in a university in Blacksburg, Virginia. And while I was talking with the question and answer portion, a great big woman came walking in the room, you know. She said, I want to know one thing. I said, okay. It just shocked everybody. She just came walking in like that, you know. It's happened to me several times.
Yeah,
but
it was,
this particular time, she said, how come you men can have four wives and a woman can only have one husband? She was, people were like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
And it came in my mind, and I asked her, I said, excuse me, are you married? Yeah, why? I said, well, because I would like for you just to think about your husband for a minute. Why? She said in a real hateful way.
Yeah.
I said, well, just humor me for a minute. Think about your husband. Okay. I said, when he comes home from work, how you know, treat him, he wants you to feed him, take care of him, everything. Yeah, that's him, all right. I said, okay. Would you like to have another one just like him? No way! I said, then what do you want four? And then everybody laughed. But then I come to the subject.
Yeah.
Who actually has the advantage in a society where a woman cannot have except one husband? Huh? Who has got the big advantage? And a man can have no more than four. I mean, remember at the time this came, there was no limit on how many wives a man could have.
Okay.
1,000 wives, 500 wives, as many as he wanted. And they were not treated as we understand wives today in Islam. They were treated like possessions, lower even than animals or garments. They were just bought, sold, traded, given away. If you liked her, I mean, that was great. But if you didn't, you could kick her out. And nobody would say anything, even if he was beating them.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's clear in Islam about that subject, which I don't want to break off into it right now. But that also is not permitted in Islam. But let's come back to this. Who has the advantage? Rights and limits. When the woman has a child, and this child is entitled to full rights, inheritance is one of the biggest rights in Islam. How can the child inherit from his father if he doesn't know who the father is?
That's a good point.
Could be a big dispute right away. That's the father, the one with all the money. The father's going, uh-uh. And the other children from that father are saying, no, no, no. So how do you prove it? And now today they could say, well, we do a DNA testing. Well, for 1,400 years, they didn't actually have that, did they?
Yeah.
And then there's some other things about DNA testing. It's not that accurate as we might have thought at one time. But to come back to the main point is, who has the advantage, the men or the women? Now, outside of the family issues that would naturally evolve from a problem like that,
yeah,
multiple husbands, who has the advantage? And I'll show you how to do it. Take 100 people on this side and 100 on this side. These are all men and these are all women, okay? Now, one man from here marries four of these girls, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, another man marries four girls. Another, and so, and so.
Okay.
Toward the end, when you get down toward the end, Who has the most selection, the men or the women? Because when there's only one girl left, the boy over here can only choose that girl.
Yeah.
But every single girl there could choose any of those men at any time as long as he doesn't have four already.
Okay.
So the advantage is not to the men. The advantage is to the women. Because she says, oh, look, this lady's being treated like a queen. He's a good husband. I want a husband just like that. Okay, what's the problem? Take him. Simple as that. She can send an offer of marriage, and if he accepts, boom, they're married. And now she's got the husband she wanted. But the men don't have that luxury. And they don't get to find out all these details until later. Whereas she can know a lot of details from the fact that this woman is already married. Oh, how does he treat her? What is going on with that? There's another point, too, about this. It is not in Islam that you can just have four wives. It was that the first thing of all was you could not marry orphan girls. And the reason for that is, again, inheritance. Because it used to be a custom you could marry any of these girls at any age. 2 years old, 1 year old, their parents die, you say that's my wife, and take all of their wealth instantly, just like that. It was a real sneaky trick that men pulled. But it says in the ayah, the verse, right before that, it says, do not marry these orphan girls to take their wealth away from them before they're matured, mixing your wealth with their wealth for a gain. That's why the next verse, verse 3 in chapter 4 on Nisa, the women, says clearly in it, marry other women of your choice. Now, if you understand that, why would you read only part of the verse? Marry four women? It doesn't even say that. Marry other women of your choice, not these orphan girls. Don't take advantage of these children. Don't go out here and do that. It's the opposite of what people think, what they're being told by some very misguided people. The next thing it says is, marry other women of your choice. Ithna, thalatha, arba, two, three, four. It starts with the number two. You could have two, you could have three, you could have four. But then the clear restriction comes here at the end. But only if you can treat them equally. If you're not able to do that, then it clearly says marry only one. And today, the Muslims of the world, throughout 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, are the most monogamous of all of the societies, and they have been for centuries. So the reality is that it works toward what? One with one and staying together. That's the whole point behind the marriage, isn't it?
Jazakallah kullu khair, Sheikh. We spoke so much about marriage, and I'm sure there's so much more to cover. Can you please give us just a quick summary of everything you spoke about?
In a nutshell, the ideal of marriage in Islam is simple. It's a union of people coming together, the husband and the wife, but also the families as well, and to give rights. Rights to the man, rights to the woman, rights to the families, grandparents, children, everybody getting their rights. That's the concept of marriage. If something happens down the road, there are relief valves, both sides, to work things through, to help build the community, make it stronger, and make it so that everybody is comfortable with what they have in God's religion.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Okay, we've run out of time once again. Do visit our website, www.islamswomen.com. It's no apostrophe, just an S. Thank you again for staying tuned to Misconceptions. We'll see you soon, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ask me who my prophet is. I will say, haven't you heard? His name is Muhammad. A mercy to the worlds, a mercy to the worlds. If you ask me who my enemy is, I will say, don't you know? If you ask me who my enemy is, he's that same old devil, that same old devil.